telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong.
This is the Phantom from the World Wide Web. Welcome to Phantom Radio, presented by the Kegel Company, the number one lean maintenance company in the world. Well, Phantom fans, this week's special guest has been here with us many times before, and he always gives our listeners a lot of valuable information. He has coached many top pros and international players. He's been a student of the game for well over 40 years now, and he's developed many of the modern coaching techniques that are currently being taught around the world. And he's also known for thinking outside the box in training and helping bowlers of all levels. Known as one of the top ball drillers in the world, and all of this experience has led him to develop a revolutionary new method of laying out the grip on the bowling ball, which is known as the tri-grip. He has also developed a glove with Storm called the Power Glove, and always busy learning and teaching. So let's get him out here and see what he's up to now. So here he is again, Mr. Bill Hall. Hello, Bill, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, Blue Doyle, it's nice to talk to you again. You know, and we just got done with the Hall of Fame induction into the USBC not too long ago. I tell you what, it was great seeing you again. Of course, Litch, Johnny Campos, Ernie Schlegel, Dave Abadi. I mean, the list is forever and ever. But, you know, I realized, looking at the photo that was taken of us, what a friendship we all had and how much we depended on each other for not only our work life, but we became personal friends, and we would discuss and support each other on things with, you know, our personal lives. And it just brought back a lot of memories of how fortunate I was to have you as a friend and everyone else and all the different things in life that we shared from that experience.
Well, Pards, I really appreciate you mentioning that. And I was thinking the same thing. I was looking over there. You were at Larry Lichtenstein's table with his son. And his son wasn't even born when me and you were old buddies back in the day. It's over 40 years ago that we've been good friends. And, you know, that's one thing that I love is friendship. And, Pards, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us on Phantom Radio. I've got a lot of questions I'd like to ask you so that me and the listeners can continue to learn more. So, are you ready for this?
Jump right in there. Let's see what we got.
All right, Pards. Well, as you know, I follow Facebook, and I'm able to keep up with a lot that's going on in the industry. And I saw on there that you're an avid golfer, which I did know, but you're always working on a new project. Do you want to talk about it now on this month's show?
Absolutely. You know, you introduced me to somebody, Sam Villarreal, who's an incredible artist. And I've always had this vision. What people may not know about me is I'm an animated or animation nut. I love animation. So we started talking, and for 2 years I was looking for an artist that could draw what I had in my head. Then he made the exact thing I had in my head, which is the range rat. Because when we golf, if we're at a driving range a lot, we're known as a range rat. So we have designed a whole family of different rat golfers. And we're going to be coming out with the very first one. Actually, I'm excited. The first production is supposed to be ready in the next couple of days. And the first one we're coming out with is Rowdy Rat. Rowdy Rat is basically the Charlie Brown of golf. He can never get it right. He's never going to be good, but that doesn't mean he ever gives up. He continues to work at it. So we've got him to start off with, and then we'll start adding family members later on. But it's actually a golf T-shirt line with animated characters.
Wow. Man, I'll tell you what, you couldn't have a better partner. This guy is nonstop. He's a workaholic. I call him in the middle of the night sometimes. He's working. I don't know if it's how far along it is, Parts, but we'll be glad to help you, you know, market it on the show. I don't know how far you got yet, but do you have a website or anything yet where people can contact you to place any orders?
Yes, it's called therangerat.com.
Cool. All right, who handles the website? Do you watch it, or who's doing it?
I take care of it. I'm almost done with everything, and as soon as I want to make sure, you know, as you know, I'm waiting for the very first shirts to come in so I can do all my artwork. Make sure everything that we put on the site is extremely accurate so that when we do it and we launch everything, it's an easy go. And actually, we've already started selling shirts because I've shown a few friends, and every one of them has said, I want a shirt when they're ready. So we're getting there.
Fantastic. All right, Barnes. Well, I'll help you with it as best I can, and I wish you guys the best of luck. Two of the greatest people in the world, and you deserve success, and I know how hard you work, Barnes, and you know none of us are ever going to get rich doing anything that we do because we're kind of spread out. We do a lot of different things, but nothing like passing along knowledge, and you know something like this will put a smile on people's face, and that's one thing that I do love. I love to smile. I love to have a good time, and again, I wish you guys the best of luck. But I know that I saw you the other night. You lost about 20 pounds because I know you've been injured, but that you were going to bowl the Nationals. Did you decide to do that or what?
Yeah, you know, about 2 years ago, I tore my hamstring pretty bad, and I gained 40 pounds. Because with a torn hamstring, believe me, you're not doing anything. So
yeah.
I gained a lot of weight, and it was bugging me. So I've been working on getting it off. I've given back about 25 of it. This year, it's going to be an emotional year for me. It's going to be my very last tournament. I just can't seem to get over this injury. You know, I know what I can do with a bowling ball. Unfortunately, the slide leg's not really supporting me the way I want it to. So it's tying me up a little bit at the foul line, and it's getting me backing off when I need to really go through a ball. So I'm going to actually bowl with John Fantini, who I've known for well over 40 years. We have bowled against each other. We have never bowled with each other. I'm going to bowl with friends. All of them are friends. Rich Candidate, Jeff Taylor, Murray Hickman. These are all guys I've known for an extremely long time. And we have always bowled against each other. But I want to go out, finish my last tournament, just be with my friends. I don't care. The only eagle hunting any of us is going to be doing is on a beer can. So we're not getting anywhere. I mean, we're all kind of past. But you know what? It's going to be a great experience. You know, as the old saying goes, Father Time is undefeated. And yeah, it's time for me to step off the approach. I mean, I'll still bowl a little bit. But as far as bowling competitively, this injury is just not going to allow that. It was pretty severe. It's just time to recognize when it's time to move on.
You know, I knew a few of those guys that you mentioned, but I especially know John Fantini, and you and him together bowling. You know, you'll be giving each other lessons, but probably won't even have time to throw a shot.
Yeah, I've already told them. I said, if we start talking about anything bowling related while we're bowling, I'm going to go talk to somebody else.
I know. Yeah, you'll be working on something else. He'll be working on something else. You might hit on something, but yeah, I'm just happy that you're up there with your buddies and having a good time because, let's face it, that's what it's all about, Parnes. And, you know, I mentioned Facebook, and there's a couple things I want to mention about Facebook. I see your daughter's on there. What a nice-looking young girl. And she's pretty active too, right?
Her thing is taekwondo, golf. Now she's into dance. You know, it's been an amazing thing being a father. And even though I got started very, very late, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. It's an amazing thing to watch the process of growth, watching her learn and watching her trying to understand why certain things are the way they are. And, you know, she's done very, very well in school. And next year, actually, she'll be going on to a what I call a higher education. She'll be going on to a magnet school. And honestly, I know people aren't going to like it. I thank God she won't be in the public school system anymore. It's what I call the public non-education. It's time for her, and she qualified with very high grades. Her math skills, she's in fifth grade, are at an eighth grade level. Her reading skills are at a ninth grade level. Her science skills are at a seventh grade level. Wow. And her computer skills are at an eighth grade level. So there's really no challenge for her in public school because they just kind of cycle people through.
Yeah. Well, Parge, I can tell you one thing for sure. And, you know, I haven't seen her in person. I saw her once when she was a little girl. But your wife and your daughter are very fortunate to have a wonderful husband like you and a great father. I'll tell you what, Parge, I know how proud you are of her, and I just hope she realizes it. You know, like I mentioned, Facebook, I got another thing here I want to ask you about. There's always a lot of controversy in different sports, especially bowling. You know, you can walk up and down any concourse and hear all kind of controversy. Sometimes it's positive, but most of the time it's negative. But what's going on with some of the bowlers out there that regarding using the thumb in the ball versus the two-hand technique? I'd really appreciate hearing your opinion on that.
Here's where we are. When bowling originally, the concept of bowling originally started, there were no holes. Then we came up with what we call the slot grip, where it literally looked like a slot where you could hold it like a monkey hanging on a bar with a thumb. So that was known as the slot grip. So we went from no holes to basically holding it with every part of our hand. We went from there onto what is known as a two-finger grip. Eddie Lebanski was probably the most famous bowler using that. And he used his middle finger and his thumb, as most people did at that time. So we went from basically holding it with our palm, no holes, to holding it with all five parts of our hand, to holding it with two fingers of our hand. Then we added the conventional grip, which was the ring finger. We went from all those, and then we went semi-fingertip to fingertip to finger grips to thumb solids to interchangeable thumbs, and now we're heading towards holding it with two fingers again and holding it in our palm. The main concept to me is that bowlers have been constantly looking for a better way to hold the bowling ball. Maybe the two-handed way was supposed to be the way. It's not something that I worry about. It's something that I teach. Whatever we can do to better the ability of the player, whether it's fingers, no fingers, who knows, we might end up palming the ball in the future. We don't know that right now. However, what we've got to do is we've got to start aiming towards what I call the fundamentals of the game and our outline. You know, people talk about the Olympics. That's great. We're never going to be in the Olympics. I can tell you that there's different opinions for that, but I have questions that I would like to ask. What is our standard ball weight? We don't have one. What is our standard lane surface? We don't have one. What is our standard core? We don't have one. Why can one person wear a hunk of metal and the other one doesn't? We don't have any rules that restrict a piece of metal on a wrist. Is a cover of a flaw in a physical game. I don't care what anybody tells me. I've got plenty of data that shows otherwise. So until we come up with a standard and we separate the recreational side and the entertainment side from the actual sports side, where there's something visual that people can relate to, that they can now look and go, okay, well, that's the entertainment. That's the recreational. Oh, this is actually the sports side. Until we get there, I think the last thing we need to worry about is whether someone's holding it with a thumb, no thumb, two fingers, two hands, palming it. I think we got other things to worry about.
Wow, well spoken, man. I'll tell you what, that takes in a lot of area there, which you just talked about, and history, over 100 years of different ways to hold a bowling ball. And you said it best, you know, we don't know what the future holds. If we knew all that, we can make millions and millions of dollars by forecasting it and promoting it the way it's going to be somewhere down the road. But We have no idea where that's going to be. And, you know, to tell you the truth, in my opinion, I don't think we should be in the Olympics because it's such a corrupt body. I don't know if bowling wants to go that direction. Give them millions and millions of dollars and then hear about nothing but corruption when it's all over with. So I don't know about that, Barnes. That's just my opinion.
I don't even think that the Olympics would do us any good. We don't have a foundation as to what our sport is. What is our standard on volume of oil? Do we have one? No, we don't. So until we find a way to find out who the best bowler is, I don't think it's anything that we should worry about. I think we need to take care of the foundation of our problems first and to actually be honest about it. That's the one thing that we're having trouble with in this industry. We do not want to be honest that the people that are shooting 900s, whatever, 850s or whatever, they are not professional bowlers and they have an awful lot of assistance. So let's be honest about it.
Exactly. You know, well, I'll tell you what, that opens up a whole about five more shows talking about the 900s. There's, I don't know, well over 30 of them by now. And you know, it's kind of sad that it's happened that way. Just the other night, I know you saw him, I saw him, everybody saw him, but the great Glenn Allison was there at the Hall of Fame, and you know, his was the only one that isn't recognized. What a joke.
This is the only one that I do recognize.
Yeah.
But I know we're going to start running out of time. Can I hit you up with a question?
Well, you usually do, so yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, in today's world, the majority of the lanes are synthetic. I have a couple things that I want to ask. Do these synthetic lanes have a lifespan? And do you feel that we are using them for too long of a period and they're not being replaced often enough?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, in fact, nobody's ever asked that question on the show before. When we first started, Sam Baca and myself back in 1971, we went all around the country, and we talked to every resurfacer and every distributor and anybody that did lanes. We wanted as much knowledge as we could get. Back then, it was 100% wooden lanes back in 1971. And we heard about all the different ways to resurface. Brunswick used to resurface with a depression in the middle. So you'd play deep inside, usually in a Brunswick house. AMF, they wanted to be different. They thought everybody should bowl around the second arrow, so they put a little depression around the second arrow. And then as time went by, bowling lanes were supposed to be about 50 years old before they had to be replaced. Well, what started to happen was as the balls became more aggressive, the balls would wear out the lane finish at a faster rate. So a lot of places had to redo their lanes after about 30 years. And the insurance costs of lacquer on a lane were so high because lacquer was so volatile that the manufacturers wanted to come out with something that didn't have to recoat the lanes with this finish so that it wouldn't blow up, wouldn't catch on fire. So they came up with synthetic lanes. Well, that started coming about in the late 70s, early 80s, and now we're about 99% synthetics. And as far as synthetics, when they first came out, the very first ones, they said, well, about every 5,000 lines, you could go out there with a buffer and buff them down because they were made out of aluminum oxide. And you could knock off the high spots and smooth the lane back out again. But that was a pretty complicated way to redo the lanes, you know, after about 5,000 lines. So they came out with harder finishes, harder synthetic lanes. And that started in the middle 80s. Well, now today, in the 2015s, the 2020s, we've got approximately 20 different types of synthetics that are being put down on lanes around the world. They all have a different lifespan. They're guaranteed for about 5,000 lines, but then what happens is the balls have continued to get aggressive, and it's gotten to the point now where the amount of oil put on the lane to protect those valuable surfaces is almost about an ounce per lane. And back in the day, we used to use about a quarter of an ounce to protect the lane. But those were different kind of oils. They were basically mineral oils. Today's oils have about 14 additives in them, which are a lot slicker to protect that lane surface. So what's going on around the industry is, with most places, what we want to call blocking the lanes to make the scores higher. And all that means is they're putting heavy oil from the second arrow to the second arrow, basically, and leaving the outsides relatively dry. And now that outside of the lane is not getting protected. So these balls that are so aggressive are starting to tear them up a little bit. That's not a good sign. So I know that there's still research going on about lanes that are synthetic that are a lot stronger and can hold up better. And like you said about the Olympics, you know, there's really no standards. I've seen guys, and this is sad, that didn't have much hand and couldn't hook the ball very good. They bought the most aggressive ball they could, and then they go in and get sandpaper, put sandpaper on the ball to make it rougher. And then I've even seen guys using a rat tail file on their ball. Now, what does that do to any synthetic surface? It's got to tear it up. So, unfortunately, you know, we have no standards there. They've got standards about weights. It can be a maximum of a 16-pound ball. Other than that, they've just thrown out the whole rule book that said, throw whatever you want because everybody wants scores. And that's gotten crazy. But like I said, there's about 20 different synthetics. They're all different. They all have a different patent to them. And so they're all different hardnesses. They all last longer than others. And, you know, it's just a thing that's going to evolve as time goes by.
Question.
Okay.
You brought up something that when it was wood, the texture or the firmness or hardness of the lane was pretty soft. So let's just throw an arbitrary scale out there. So let's say that wood was actually a 5 on a hardness scale. And then if we went to the first generation of synthetics, that let's just call that a 15 on a hardness scale. So now we're up to about a 25. Now we're going to go even higher than that. And the harder the surface of the lane is, doesn't that assist in ball motion, which creates better pin carry?
Exactly. You know, there's no question about it. Again, have to go back and make some comparables. But with the wooden lanes, and we're going to use your number of 5, which whatever it was, the balls were like a 90 hardness. And as the lanes got harder and harder, the balls got softer and softer. And now it's gotten to the point where not only does the softness of the ball make a difference, but also the grit on the surface of the ball itself. And whenever you have like a snow tire, and that snow tire gets in and digs into the regular road, you get traction. Well, these bowling balls of today, the spikes on the surface of the ball are deeper than the oil. So it makes no difference how much oil you put down. The ball's still going to hook. It's gotten to be crazy. No question about it. You know, ball speed's very important. You know, the guys that throw the ball real slow or the gals that throw it real slow, they're at a disadvantage because, you know, ball speed, let's face it, the faster the ball goes, the more pin action you're going to usually get. As long as there's a roll on the ball at back end. You know, you get a drunken sailor out there that throws at 25 miles an hour with no hook or any roll on it, the ball's going to hit the pocket and just bounce off. So you need to have roll or hook, whatever you want to call it, in the back end. And these balls that make such a violent turn in the back end actually don't slow down as much as a regular delivered ball, and that creates more pin action. So, you know, you look at the side, from the side, the ball looks like it's going faster when it goes into the pocket. It's not, but it's not depleting in speed like it's supposed to be. So, you know, that direction as it gets toward the pocket is really helpful in pin carry. But, Parge, you know, this is about a 3-week show to do. We can talk more about this forever, but I can see by the old clock of all we're out of time, and I love it because You get the thoughts going, you get the juices flowing, and I can hear myself yelling and screaming. I'm getting all pumped up. My adrenaline's flying because this is my life as well as it's yours. And Parts, I really appreciate you being on with us again and always opening up our eyes and passing along information. And I really enjoyed talking with you. So you stay close by. We're going to do this again in the near future. And
sounds good, Blue Doyle. And again, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And it was really nice catching up the other day.
Yeah, I love seeing you, Parts. And Phantom fans, that's going to wrap up the show for this week. And hope that you all enjoyed it. You enjoyed hearing from Bill Hall. We look forward to talking to all of you again next week. In closing, I sincerely want to thank our sponsors, EliteBowling.com, Storm Bowling Products, and Brad Edelman and his High Roller for their valued and continued support of our show. We appreciate all that you do to keep us going back to you each and every week. This is The Phantom.
Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so